You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I am joined by the fabulous Scott Merkin. And Merk, you've been off the past week. Do you feel like your return to the White Sox clubhouse on Tuesday in Texas, is this the spark this club needs?
I think it's the push they need to get over this final leg of this, good Lord, what is it, four-city, 11-game road trip.
Right.
They've been pretty darn well without me. They're 4-4 without me being there, and I'm sure it hasn't even been noticed by the team. Maybe briefly been noticed, but that's about it.
Well, I would notice if you were gone, Merk. When the White Sox came to Cleveland and you're not here, I noticed.
Michigan softball made the College World Series, and I wasn't there to broadcast it to everyone. That's when my absence was probably noticed.
Yeah. All right, Merk. Let's get serious here for a moment.
All right, good.
This team just took 2 of 3 from the first place Astros, so, you know, all kidding aside, maybe that's the spark they need. Just trying to get things going offensively. It's just like we talked about last week. But now Jose Abreu has been dealing with some ligament, or I'm sorry, no ligament damage in the finger, but obviously a bruised and swollen finger.
Yeah,
suffered in a couple weeks ago in batting practice. So what's the latest on that? Is that something that's going to be a lingering concern, in your opinion?
Well, I was there when it happened, and they took him out, you know, during a game, and he came back and played the next day. You know, I would say they're targeting Tuesday because he had, you know, the last couple of days of the Houston series off. Monday is an off day, scheduled off day for the team, much needed for them. And then, you know, back to finish the road trip, 3 games in Arlington. So I would think, you know, judging by what Rob has done in the past, if he's ready to go, they want him in there because the offense has struggled enough without their, you know, with their best player, let alone without him. But I would think that if it's, you know, tenuous with Detroit this weekend and, you know, a busy schedule coming up where there's not a lot of off days mixed in there once again, you know, if you have to rest him an extra couple of days, you got a great first baseman in LaRoche who, you know, usually is the DH that seems to hit better when he's at first base. So, you know, there's chances. You know, last year he was hobbled by an ankle, and strangely enough it happened. It really hit its crescendo in the series in Houston. And they put him on the DL, and he came back from the DL and just tore it up in the second half, you know, just killed the ball from that point on. So I'm not saying they're going to put him on the DL, but I think, you know, just making sure your best weapon is as close to 100% as you can be 2 months of the season is a key factor for the White Sox.
Absolutely. And you mentioned LaRoche. I was going to dig into that a little bit because you're right. His numbers are far better for whatever reason, playing the position versus DH role. We've seen that with Adam Dunn, for instance.
Right.
Transitioning to DH role for the first time in his career, he really struggled with it. Other guys, like the guy they'll be facing in Texas this week, Prince Fielder, he shifts to DH this year, and it's been awesome for him. So is it just a mental adjustment for LaRoche? Is that still an ongoing process, the between-at-bats routine and all that stuff?
Judging by Prince Fielder yesterday scoring on Josh Hamilton's double, made him faster too, apparently.
That's right.
You know, Adam Dunn, and I talked to Adam Dunn near the end of his run, what turned out to be his run in his career, but with the White Sox, and he was real honest that he said even in his fourth year with the Sox, he still didn't have a real set routine, like a perfect routine of what he would have liked to have done DH-wise. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough. You know, LaRoche has talked about it. I saw he talked to reporters about it in Houston that, you know, he's trying to figure it out. He wants to make it work, and this is kind of a challenge for him, and it's gotten better as it's gone. And the fact is, nothing against Adam Dunn, as we've talked about it many times on the podcast, right? Great guy, great teammate, great person to have in your clubhouse, great hitter, too, you know, great power hitter. But LaRoche is a better first baseman, and LaRoche is a gold glove first baseman. So, you know, getting him out there a little more is not exactly a bad thing, too. And that's not taking anything away from Abreu. Abreu has good hands over first base, pretty good arm. You know, maybe not the greatest range of the world, but he's gotten better in the 2 years he's been there. So you have two pretty good options. So if LaRoche ends up playing more first base, you're certainly not losing anything. But LaRoche is the kind of guy, you know, much like Dunn, he really wants to figure it out and really wants to make this work.
LaRoche drew a lot of walks in the month of May, 22 walks in 112 at-bats. I mean, I don't know if he views that as a sign of things starting to come together for him at the plate after a slow start. But, you know, from the outside looking in, that would seem to be a good indicator.
Yeah, you know, I saw a note. He talked to my colleague and friend Daryl Van Scowen over at the Sun-Times and said, you know, it's a good thing, but it also means that he may not be swinging at the pitches that he needs to swing at. in the course of the bid. Overall, I think LaRose is just, you know, I talked to Milwaukee about this, and, you know, where he had to sit for 2 out of 3 games because there's no DH in National League ballpark. And he's just, for some reason, he's one of those guys, a little bit like Alexi has been, and Alexi's more tied in, I think, to the colder weather. But LaRose is just not a great April hitter. He's not a good starter, and he played much better in May. And, you know, as you hear a lot of broadcasters talk about, you know, the back of the baseball card doesn't lie, barring something completely unforeseen. You know, I think by the end of the year, you're still going to see LaRose with his 80 to 100 RBIs, 25 to 30 home runs, and hitting around 250 or 260. You know, it was a slow start, but he's starting to come around. And that's one of the positives the Sox can take away from this. I've said for a while, you know, take a look at them when they get back from Texas and see where they're at, and that's their first kind of real barometer. Not necessarily a all-encompassing telltale sign, but the first real checkpoint I think you have for the team. And from what I can see, yeah, they're not there. They're not a playoff team right now. They're not even a 500 team right now. But they're also not buried. And if guys who are starting off slow can get their game moving back to the level where they're accustomed, you know, they can make a little run at this. I you know, Minnesota's been a great story. Kansas City's a very good team. But I don't see anyone else in that division that, you know, the Sox should kind of not cower from, but, you know, should be leery of running away from them. I realize Detroit has injury problems. That's impacted their offense and their starting rotation. But still, you know, injuries are part of the game. So, you know, I don't think the Sox are – they're certainly not a team you could say, oh, yeah, I see it coming. You know, this is going to be a contending team. But you certainly can't write this team off still. No, not even close.
No, you can't. Energy in 7 games back. And, the Twins are a great example of how you can surge within this division. And they're also probably vulnerable themselves. Just you know, they have to prove their staying power. So – yeah,
well, even from your home state there, I mean, the Indians, you know, I mean, the Indians starting pitching is phenomenal, you know, and they have a pretty decent bullpen. I think if they get some offense, they're right there too. You know, they're right in the same basic spot as the White Sox. And remember, you know, I heard some people say in the, I think it was the Saturday postgame show after the White Sox played, is that, obviously, hence postgame, is that the Sox seem to be built more for the playoffs and not necessarily to win the division. And all you got to do is get in there. You know, whether you're the first wild card, second wild card, or you win the division by 20 games, all you got to do is get in there and, you know, play the extra game to get moving. So, you know, you get in there and you have Sale, Samardzija, Quintana, and even Rodon. You're set up with a decent bullpen. You're set up pretty well for the playoffs. But the point is, you got to play well enough to get to that point. You can't be the best team that could have been, you know, come the beginning of October.
Yep, and then so much of this comes down to the offense being what we expected it to be. One thing that has not betrayed our expectations is, you know, the catching spot has been basically a black hole offensively. And it's also kind of changing, it seems. Do you think it's becoming more of a platoon there with Tyler Flowers and Giovanni Soto? Because it's been back and forth basically the last few days.
Well, I don't think it's a platoon because they're both right-handed hitters. I mean, but Soto catches a lot of Samardzija starts. So I fully expect Soto to start Tuesday night in Texas in Arlington when Samardzija starts. You know, the thing with Flowers is, from the beginning, they've talked about that his responsibility is handling the pitchers, calling games, defense first. But in the same sense, the guy has some power. He's hit some, you know, light tower home runs, some tape measure shots. So even if he doesn't hit above 230, 240, I think they'd love to have him hit 230 or 240 right now. They need more production from him. They need more power production, RBI productions from him. And Soto, you know, they're still kind of figuring out. He's had some key hits. He hasn't hit a lot, but he seemed to have had some key. He had the double that won the game in extra innings Friday night, which is a big win for the White Sox. Dallas Keuchel pitching on Saturday. And so I think, you know, you have a decent mix there. But the interesting thing with the draft coming up next week, Anthony, is there really is no, you know, with no offense to anyone in the system, there's no catcher of the future on this team. You know, neither Flowers or Soto are exactly aged, obviously, even in baseball terms. You know, they played a little bit, but they're not done for. But I mean, you have Kevin Smith is a good prospect. Alfaro, I think his last name is, they got from Columbia. He's the brother of the kid in the Texas system. They like him. But, you know, these are guys who aren't slam dunks and are still a little ways away. There's not a guy that they're pointing to and saying, well, if Flowers and Soto get us to 17, then we have player X to come in. So, and, you know, Brett Austin, they drafted. He was Carlos Rodon's battery mate in NC State. There's some options down there, but still no one right now who's a clear-cut guy. So does that mean, you know, the Sox go after a young guy in the draft who's a catcher, you know, maybe their second pick somewhere in there? Or do they go out and get someone if they feel like they're in this thing come, you know, late June, beginning of July, leading up to the trade deadline at the end of July?
I think it was after Soto's hit the other night that you mentioned, I think that was when Robin Ventura said, you know, one guy gets a hit and you consider him hot. You consider him the hot hand between those two catchers. It's kind of where things are at offensively from that spot.
And how about props to Robin Ventura for corralling Tyler Flowers as he flew into the dugout Friday night. And
that's right. I saw that.
As a big man to catch, I think there was a slight back strain for Robin, but he played through it and managed the next two games. So.
You got to play through pain. You mentioned the draft, Merck. The White Sox have the 8th overall pick. I know people are saying it's not a top-heavy draft by any means. More scattered talent. White Sox have a history of going with those college arms. When you think of Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon, any sense of what they might do at number 8, or is it pretty wide open?
Well, it's kind of interesting. You probably heard the same thing, and obviously our great draft experts, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, are the first and second words, or the first 1A and 1B words on this. But
yeah,
talking to the Sox people, you know, last year they kind of knew the first three guys were Kolek, Aiken, and Rodon, with Nola kind of in there too. This year they really have told me, people I've talked to have said, there's 8 or 9 guys that they're looking at, and they figure one of them is going to get to them at number 8. You know, they really haven't said, you know, player A is our target. They like these guys. There's none of them that kind of jump out overall, and they just figure they really don't know. They don't know how the top is going to be set. The one interesting thing for the Sox this year is they don't have a second and third round pick because of the signing of David Robertson and Melky Cabrera. So they have some good time to prepare for that fourth round pick. I think they pick 8th, and then I want to say it's either 100. I think it's 112th is their next pick. But, you know, I know the kid from Illinois they like, Tyler Jay, also prepped locally at Lamont High School, which is about 45 minutes from U.S. Cellular Field. I believe left-handed pitcher. So, the question is, will he make it? And no one really knows. So, you know, I think college pitching is what you're looking at, but I think it all depends on what – it really is going to be a lot dependent on what happens above, what happens in the 7 picks before they go.
All right, Scott Merkin's all over it. Even after a week off, Merk, you are on top of everything White Sox. That's no surprise at all. I want to thank him for joining us, and thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.